From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. I'm Jim Browdy, sitting in for Marjorie Egan. Yet again is Sue O'Connell from Bay Windows and the South End News. Now, as part of a congressional delegation, Congressman Stephen Lynch recently traveled to Nigeria to review security at U.S. outposts in Africa. It takes about 15 hours to fly from D.C. to Lagos, Nigeria. That's one way, 15 hours. Yet all it took to test Congressman Lynch's patience was a 4-minute, 53-second phone call from the vice president into the St. Patrick's Day breakfast. As soon as Biden hung up, here is Congressman Lynch.
I just hope he didn't call collect. Holy cow. Holy cow.
That was right.
That was painful.
Congressman Lynch joins us on the phone, we believe, from the White House, so it could be a little uncomfortable today, Congressman.
Good morning. No, I'm actually, the White House is tonight. They have their St. Patrick's party tonight, but I am in D.C., and the Vice President, I guess when you call into a roast, you should be prepared to be roasted, I guess.
I guess so.
That's true. That's why it's called a roast. Congressman Lynch, I know that I have held your feet to the fire in Bay Windows over the St. Patrick's Day parade and your participation, but I also know and have written that you were also crucial in working behind the scenes to make sure that the gay veterans group could march. How are you feeling today after such a success in your neighborhood, and I know matching the values that you have about equality for all Americans?
I think it was great. I went off on a hitch. The weather didn't cooperate, but that's about the only thing. I think the outcasts and pride groups that marched got great response from the crowd, and that's their statements as well. And from what I saw, it was terrific. And it's good to have that in the rearview mirror. And I look forward to marching inclusive parades. Last year, we were on the 2-yard line, and I felt that, I marched anyway last year, but I felt it was really a lack of cooperation from some of the New York groups that really put the kibosh on it. And I think if we were left to dealing just with the Boston groups, we would have had a success last year. But I give great credit to Marty Walsh, our mayor, for sticking in there and bringing the party together. He was certainly, he was the difference maker, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, for all the great issues and difficult issues that you work on as a congressman, both for national interest and international interest, to know how much time you put into that last year and this year goes noted. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, sir.
Okay, so Congressman, let's talk about another major occurrence that may or may not happen here, the Olympics. When you were on with us in January, here's what you said to Marjorie and me. I think we should embrace it. It's exciting. Do it in a smart way. Well, since we spoke to you, you're in the Boston Globe saying that you and your colleague Michael Capuano didn't find out that there were plans for major stadiums in your districts until you read about them. You didn't hear from Boston 2024. Last week, we got the news about some fairly lofty fees and contracts for some political people around town. Are you still thinking in March, Congressman, that we should embrace it? It's exciting?
I think so. Although I probably have some qualifiers. The stadium location, we can work that out, and there have always been several locations under consideration. So that's a process we continue to work through. I still think the site near Andrews Square is unworkable. The salary thing, boy, I'll tell you, it's starting to look like the gravy train a little bit, and it's putting a bad spin on this. I hope the organizers, and John Fish understand that it's looking very bad with this whole list of people, with all due respect to the former governor, his staff, it just looks really, really bad. And I don't want a good event and a good effort to be dragged down by some unwise decisions and some salaries that are eye-popping, quite frankly.
Hey, before we leave this topic, Congressman, since that initial, I think it was in a Bob Ryan piece in the Globe mentioning that you and Capuano had not been contacted by the Olympics, by Boston 2024 before you heard about these potential sites. Have, since then, has Boston 2024 been working closely with you and the other Boston congressman Capuano around this, or is it more of the same?
Right. They have. We actually asked them to come down and make a full presentation to the delegation. Everyone showed up. So all of the nine members of the House and two senators came. We had a little luncheon. So yeah, they have been good. And also we've got a follow-up meeting. But at that one, the governor and Mayor Walsh have been invited as well to make the entire presentation to sort of work through some of the issues that we identified in the first meeting. So that's ongoing.
Congressman Lynch, as you know well, the issue of ground troops is back in the national discussion. And as someone who has been very intimately involved on this issue for the long run, what are your feelings about where we are in terms of Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah. Well, I understand that they're delaying the withdrawal in Afghanistan, but not increasing the numbers there. It may be wise. It may be wise in that respect to wait until some of those units can take over in Afghanistan. But the real issue is Iraq and Syria. And the proposal in this AUMF would be to reinsert U.S. troops into Iraq and probably eastern Syria for the purpose of it, training and equipping the so-called moderate Syrian army, and also to retrain, I guess, the Iraqis. And I'm totally against it. So it's a terrible idea for a couple of reasons. Number one, we just spent 10 years training Iraqis. Okay, we trained. If you look at all the reports, and I was part of this tracking it, we trained 938,000 Iraqis. That's including their border patrol, police, and army. We spent $25 billion in American taxpayer money. And we lost 4,000 good young Americans in that effort to retrain them. After we completed that mission, the Iraqis basically gave up the ghost in the face of maybe 25,000 ISIS members. And so they basically abandoned their posts, gave up the weapons that we had paid for, and failed to defend their country. And so now the plan is to go back in again with a smaller amount of money, I guess $10 billion this time, and maybe in 3 years, train them again with the hopes that at the end of that 3 years, they'll defend themselves. I just don't see it. It didn't work the first time. We spent a lot more money, lost a lot more people, and trained a lot more than we will this time. It didn't work. So we got to come up with a new plan. I do want to point to a couple of successes we've had. One is when we've used U.S. and Jordanian air power in combination with the Kurds, the Peshmerga, and some of the frac units from out of Baghdad, the Iraqi units, we've been successful. We've taken back the Mosul Dam. We took back Kobani. We've taken back a bunch of major villages. The Iraqis now, are going at Tikrit pretty quickly. So, we've had some success where we used our logistics, our air power, but not put boots on the ground. And I think that's the formula for success, because it actually requires the Iraqis to step up and would require the Syrian opposition, although I have not much faith in the group they've got there now. It would require them to take custody of their own problems and their own country.
Congressman, how many times have you been to Iraq?
I think the last trip was like 14.
Okay.
And Afghanistan, maybe 11.
Okay. 12. So step back for a second. We understand clearly your position on additional troops, U.S. troops in Iraq. The most recent poll, 60-some%, surprised me, of Americans said they supported U.S. troops. Is it just a matter of time till the president reverses his position and says, or calls them something else, maybe advisors, trainers? But is your view of the future that we are going to hear this president say we do have to commit more ground troops to Iraq?
I'm not sure. He seems, I give him credit that he's coming back to Congress and wants a new authorization for the use of military force. I give him credit for that. Ostensibly, he could probably rely on the old one and sort of budget, I guess, and say he can use that authorization for this this deployment of new troops. What he will do, I'm not sure. I don't think he wants it to be his legacy that, you know, that we embarked on a second major war in the Middle East, in Iraq.
We're talking to Congressman Stephen Lynch. The reason why I think the line is terrible is obviously the vice president has something to do with this, but we don't have any evidence of that fact. Congressman, you're just back from Nigeria, and while the focus in this country, I guess, is on Boko Haram, and we just read a couple of weeks ago that they have pledged their allegiance to ISIS, isn't the government itself as much of the problem there as Boko Haram is?
Well, the government is bad. Good luck, Jonathan. There, his election is up on the 25th, I think, of this month. So very soon, he's got a pretty stiff opposition from Muhammad Buhari, former military, a general. And I think it's going to be very close. Everyone there, you know, I was there last week, and everyone thinks it's going to be the closest election in the history of Nigeria. They haven't had many. I think they've had five elections since the end of military rule. But look, it's a tough, it's 170 million people. They've got some major, major problems. And yeah, they've got major corruption there. But look, Boko Haram is going around, you saw what they did in Chibok, where they abducted 275 girls. We met with our special forces folks there, along with the Brits and the French. We're trying to get those girls back. Boko Haram, they've done a bunch of other abductions of smaller schools nobody's heard about. They've also attacked boys' school, middle school, burning to death, 49 youngsters, just chained the school shut and burned them. So they're particularly barbaric, and I don't think it's fair to compare an incompetent government, as bad as they might be, with the purposeful slaughter, of innocent civilians and children by Boko Haram. They're a bad group. And we got to make sure we nip this in the bud with the help of our allies in Chad and Niger and Cameroon. I think if we get those people on the ground, we should be able to. I think there's 6,000 to 8,000 of these Boko Haram, and we should be able to match up pretty well with them.
Congressman, a couple of months ago, I interviewed a couple of times the former ambassador to Nigeria, Walter Carrington. He was Bill Clinton's ambassador. And I asked him and his wife, who is Nigerian, about whether or not what I consider to be the fairly weak world response to Boko Haram is a function of the color of the skin of the kids who have been kidnapped, and we don't know what's happened to them. They both, without hesitation, said they thought the answer was yes. Do you?
I don't think, no, but look, the country is an African country. I do think that perhaps the fact that these kids are from a poor village, a poor black village, I don't think it's their race. I think it's their caste, if you will. This is a poor area. There's always been a bifurcation between North and South Nigeria. The South, which would include Abuja, the capital, and Lagos. But the North has always been a disconnect politically, socially, culturally. And I think the fact that these girls were abducted from, a northern village does have something to do with it. I really do. But I don't think it's racial. It might be tribal, but I don't think it's racial.
So, Congressman Lynch, you have been there in Nigeria recently, and your efforts, basically as you're laying out for us today, to urge citizens to vote because the government that is imperfect is better than the evil, and also looking at our embassy security there, which, of course, is an issue, I think, for all of our embassies everywhere in the world that we are in today. What are your takeaways around feeling, the election's going to be tight, but do you feel that your message connected with the citizens?
I think it did. Ironically, my first election was on September 11th, 2001, so they were talking about that on Nigerian TV and how, in our situation, we urged everybody to get out and vote, even though, a couple of the planes had come out of Logan. We had the terrible attacks on 9/11. I just think that this is an opportunity for of the people in Nigeria, you know, to re-engage. This could be a big difference. There's two candidates. I mean, you know, you can't measure them by Western standards, but I think that maybe Buhari, you know, I think he'd be stronger against corruption. I really do. The danger is that, you know, he's got a history with the military, and people there are very nervous about whether he would reintroduce military rule, that type of thing. But, you know, I think that definitely that democracy is the answer, and I think perhaps some of the past apathy in Nigeria has been because people don't think it makes a difference. Well, this election in Nigeria on the 25th of March does make a difference. It will make a huge difference in the direction of the country. So, you know, that's why we were urging them to get out to vote.
Well, here, speaking of voting, here are the two one of the last two big questions for you. You know, it seems like we've only got Hillary Clinton in the primary, and the question is, Congressman Stephen Lynch, will you run if asked?
I'm with Hillary.
Even after the email, how much does this email flap and the foreign contributions in the millions from nations that aren't so hot on women's rights to the Clinton Global Initiative? How much do they both those things concern you, Congressman?
Well, they don't help. You know, I got to admit that they don't help. But I think, look, she's the best we've got. She really is. She's very qualified. She's got good heart. God knows she's got a toughness here to be doing this. And I just think that, look, I trust her. I know her. I trust her judgment. You know. I don't think people will be pulling the lever and thinking about emails come election day. At least I hope they're not. And I think there'll be a Republican onslaught. And also, you know, in fairness, some of the press, fairly or unfairly, they really have it in for her. So they don't like the idea. Some in our own party just don't like the idea that, you know, she's Bill Clinton's wife and she's running for election. But, you know, the fact that she has almost cleared the field is a testament, I think, in part to her qualifications, and that if she were to put her name forward, you know, she would be overwhelmingly recognized as someone who is capable of doing that job.
Okay, here's the second big question for you. You know, as you know, those rabble-rousers in the South End have worked together as community organizations to self-ban the Space Saver.
Yeah.
Listen to his voice.
And, you know, having been in South Boston for several days yesterday, still seeing, you know, the snow being removed and the Space Savers out there, there's now another neighborhood organization out of the North End moving forward saying, let's ban the Space Saver. Mayor Walsh has been on record saying that, you know, you can keep your Space Saver for 48 hours after a storm. But, you know, where does Congressman Stephen Lynch come down on the Space Saver issue?
Well, as you know, Sue, this is a cultural issue, and, you know, this is part of our culture in South Boston. It's sort of like the hijab, you know, among Muslim women. Some of them like to wear it, some of them don't like to wear it.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean? So give us a break here. You know, this is a cultural thing for us. It's unique to our Irish culture, even though it's not valued in some circles. You know, let us keep our Space Savers and let the South End, you know, let a million flowers bloom. If they want to take in their Space Savers, God bless them. But when they're looking for a spot, don't come over to Southie and packing over with us and taking a bus back. You know?
Let me just say, to quote Congressman Stephen Lynch from the St. Patrick's Day breakfast, that comparison was painful, Congressman. Hey, Steve Lynch, before you go away on a very serious note for just 30 seconds, the trial of Jahar Tsarnaev is happening in your district in South Boston. There is one of the things that Marjorie and I are obsessed with is that we can watch Aaron Hernandez be tried, but we can't watch Bill Bulger or Tsarnaev be tried because there are no cameras in federal courtrooms. Congress could change that. How do you vote? How would you vote on opening up federal courtrooms to cameras, Congressman?
Well, not only would I vote, yes, I'm a co-sponsor. We've got three bills, I think, that are on the calendar right now that would open up the federal courthouse to televised proceedings. So there is a proviso in there that if the judge thought extenuating circumstances existed and it might jeopardize the justice to any of the parties or a particular witness. They could require that the cameras be turned off for a part of the trial. But in general, they would have to show those extenuating circumstances. But generally, I think it's very good. I think it's good for civic lessons reasons that people see how their federal courts operate. You know, what the process of law is here. You know, due process rights. All of that are bound up in these trials. It's not just the more, you know, dramatic moments, but also the whole process and the fairness of the judge and the skill of the attorneys. I think it's a good civics lesson for the general public to see. So I'm totally in favor of televising these trials.
Great. Congressman, we're glad to hear that. And make sure you say hello to the vice president for us, will you?
I'm actually ducking him.
You're a smart man.
Thank you. Congressman Stephen Lynch represents the 8th Congressional District. Thank you for joining us. Coming up, we're asking you, is it time to do away with the space savers once and for all? That's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.